Are you struggling to effectively train both your customers and channel partners on your product? Well, NetExam is the all-in-one solution you need. As a leading customer and partner education platform, NetExam is purpose-built to help companies like yours deliver engaging, personalized training experiences that drive product adoption, customer success, and partner enablement. NetExam has worked for many years with companies that have the most advanced partner channels in the world, like Oracle, Dell, and Johnson & Johnson, with advanced features like customizable learning tracks, interactive content, robust analytics, and modern AI tools. NetExam empowers you to create seamless education programs that scale with your business for both your customers and your valuable channel partners. Stop wasting time and resources on ineffective training methods. Partner with NetExam and unlock the power of comprehensive customer and partner education to grow your business. Visit netexam.com to learn more today. Welcome to C-Lab, the customer education laboratory, where we explore how to build customer education programs, experiment with new approaches, and we always say exterminate with extreme prejudice the myths, bad advice, poor information, missing information that stops our growth, deadens tracks. I'm Dave, and Adam, it's great to see you back in the U.S. today, right?
I'm back in the U.S., not SR. So we're not all the way. We're not all the way to a White Album, but we are in the suburbs of Dallas, Texas, at my parents' house. So Hello from the Central Time Zone.
Well, it's good to have you back in the U.S. and we're not like
back in the U.S. back in the U.S. back in the U.S.
back in the U.S.
not SR.
All right, well, let's jump into it today. We're wrapping up the end of the year, and we're going to try to push ourselves.
We're counting down the top episodes of the year. And then we are going to go back. We're going to revisit our predictions from the beginning of the year, see how we did. We're going to make some predictions for next year, and then we are going to wrap up the year with style and panache and extreme prejudice.
Style, panache, I love it. All right. Before we
get
going,
that on the shirts?
Style, panache, extreme prejudice, C-Lab 2025.
if you would buy that shirt, let us know and we'll design it.
Okay. I throw down we have the pencil on it. I like that. All right. Let's go from the top. I think we have the top five. Why don't you lead in with the first one, because that was one of yours. A bunch of these were. We had a good run this year. These were the top ones by.
I mean, I'm not going to say that there's something about the fact that so many of the episodes that I did interviews for in the top five. I promise I didn't juke the stats.
No, these are really good ones. And tell me about Katie Felton, because this one, one of the things I've really appreciated this year is that, in particular, because you have, you know, change location. Now we're in Europe, and most of these people are from the U.S. anyway, but we've seen a little bit more diversity. So tell me, starting about
let's talk about this. So Katie Felton joined our show. This is number five, by the way, the fifth best performing episode, because the data don't lie. We had asked last year what topics you wanted to hear us do episodes about. And we made a New Year's resolution to actually do those episodes. So we may have to do this again this year, because as it turns out, when we ask you what you want us to do episodes about, and then we do those episodes, you listen to those episodes. So go figure. So Katie Felton came and talked to us about education services. So we did back-to-back episodes with Katie and with Mindy Barenblatt, and both of us took them deep into what education services actually looks like in the year 2024. And how it works. And I really loved that episode with Katie. I love the one with Mindy too, but when you're getting practical hands-on perspective on how someone's program actually works and what they're actually doing and how they're structuring things and getting into the thorny issues, those are the episodes I love doing the most.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, if we're going to have a call to action, I'd say let's repeat that. One of the goals that we had when we initiated our work at C-Lab was we want to talk to people We just don't want to talk to the loudest voices. We want to talk to the people that are doing the work. The hard.
Yeah, and I think this year, if you look at some of the top ones, there's quite a few of those. In fact, the next one, Dave, I don't know if you want to take that, but really follows the theme.
Yeah, no. I did want to take this because when I listened through the discussion that we had with Dan Ennis, again, our number top, you know, four out of our top five this year, it got into this edge of digital CS and customer education and how they fit and interlock and interplay. And that I love listening to that one, talk to Dan afterwards. And this is an emerging trend, right? We're seeing a lot more of education teams coming from different angles. You know, I know that the team that I'm joining here soon, I'll tell you more about that later, is focused on marketing. This, with CS, I've worked so much this year with Gainsight, and the Gainsight team really dug this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, digital customer success and lifecycle marketing have a lot of DNA in common. When we talked about the relationship between customer marketing and customer education at previous companies, I would say, well, customer marketing is the CS of marketing and customer education is the marketing of CS, which is like a little bit of a pat way of putting it, but it shows, I think, the edge that we're on. And so I really love that discussion, and I would definitely recommend you go back and listen to that episode with Dan Ennis if you haven't, because I'm convinced that where customer education is headed, it's not the world that it has been in the past of education services. It's not even really the world that it's been in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years of really building like standalone academies, certifications, things like that. I think that customer education is becoming part of an ecosystem with community and with digital CS. And so what Dan had to share about how he's put together in the past, he worked at Monday.com, he's now at Workato. There's a lot to learn from that.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I love about Dan is that, you know, he has a practitioner's mindset, and he really also values, he posted about this on LinkedIn recently, actually. If you go follow him, you might see this post. Like, he really values people who are providing practical perspective and actually doing the work, even if you're going to be like LinkedIn loud about it, talk about what you're actually doing.
Like that LinkedIn loud. That's
LinkedIn term. Loud. If you want that on a shirt, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope to
C-Lab.
Okay, number three. Is it my turn? I am going to give a shout out. Again, thinking about this ecosystem that customer education is in now, we're often working with community, and we're often having to figure out what is the real opportunity that lies between traditional customer education and community as part of these broader scaled programs. And so we have Brian Oblinger. I don't know why I just said Oblinger. Brian Oblinger on.
Okay. And he'll be okay with that.
Brian, I'm sorry. I still love and respect you, even though I just almost mispronounced your name. And that was a great episode. Like, it was talking about the intersection between community and customer education. What'd you think, Dave?
I really dug it because I came back later and met him at Gainsight Pulse in May and watched him present, talked with him a lot. And that this intermix that we now have, we're not just seeing us as a vanilla, we're just doing customer education. We're all mixed up. And being able to talk about the same use cases from the different perspective. You know, now, okay, well, now I'm focused from the community lens, doing that all day. That's my remit. And now how do I bring these other things in? What part of the community is focused on customer education and how do I facilitate it? So
yeah, I'm gonna give a shout out as well to Brian's done an incredible job putting together a community strategy academy at communitystrategyacademy.com. He gave us a discount code on the episode that he appeared in. If you want to learn more about community, hop on over to that site. And I believe the code was Rotini. Do you remember? I think it was Rotini because
back and look at the post.
We were talking about pasta at the top of the episode because it was like National Pasta Day or something like that. So I think the code is Rotini. Go back and listen to the episode if that code doesn't work for you. But yeah, I mean, I have a ton of respect for people who have done the work and have done the work well, packaging that up and sharing their insights. So yeah, if you're looking for community,
yeah,
it's recommend really good you check stuff. Out communitystrategyacademy.com. Your turn, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about Jesse Evans. We finally had an opportunity to get him on the show. Should have been on a season one list.
I've been trying to get him on the show forever.
Yeah. Well, we've all been busy and moving around and stuff. I can't even tell you what the reason was that we didn't.
Oh, well, we didn't want him on here. No, I'm joking. Jesse, I'm joking. I think it was one of those things where like the stars didn't align. I think we tried to have him on early on when we first started having guests and weren't just doing the episodes where the two of us were talking, but Jesse's one of the first people that I met in the customer education world. And, you know, Dave, you love the mad scientists of customer education. He is one of the true mad scientists. And, it was a great opportunity to have him on because, again, it was one of the topics that listeners told us that you wanted to talk about, which was how do you collaborate with other teams? And in fact, in 2023, we did that episode called Maximum Mini because we were trying to record a mini and it ended up taking like an hour and a half. But we were talking about collaboration with marketing on that episode. So we brought Jesse on to talk about collaboration with product. And again, super substantial episode, but also full of Jesse's wild, often unorthodox ideas. And I love the way he thinks about the space to this day. So I'm really glad that we finally got to have him on.
Yeah, I really dig it too. That was fun. And again, I don't know if you got the opportunity I don't know if he went to Pulse this year in Europe when he was back home, but I saw him in May and we had a great talk. There's actually some clips I'd like to pull out of video and audio work that we did, talking about different customer education subjects in person. We've got to meet in person too, which was wonderful.
Cool. That's awesome.
If you want to grow your business, you need to educate and engage your customers at every point of the funnel. So Thinkific Plus can help you do just that with their powerful learning platform that's so easy to use. Thinkific Plus believes that customer education can combat the common challenges of recurring revenue, like churn. So, Thinkific Plus has created a purpose-built platform for agile teams that allows you to create impactful educational experiences for your customers. That means you can find new ways to engage with them, you can drive adoption, renewals, expansion, and growth, everything that a business cares about. So, reimagine education for your customers' success with Thinkific Plus. You can get 1 month of Thinkific Plus for free with our special code. Go to thinkific.com/CELABS. That's thinkific.com/CLABS.
And now, number one. I don't know if that's just going to sound really annoying on audio. That was a drum roll.
We can put a real drum roll in so we can splice that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll edit that. We'll fix that in post. Our number one episode of the year was
Julie Dirksen, Designing for Behavior Change. That was your fanboy episode this year, right?
That was my fanboy episode. I mean, speaking of people so Jesse was someone who I wanted to have on the show since the beginning and was entirely convinced that he would say yes, you know, if asked, paradoxically. I don't think we didn't make that work for like 6 years. Julie Dirksen, I think, was one of a couple of people that we had on this year that I was frankly surprised that she was so ready and willing to come on the show and share her expertise, because she's one of the people that I've looked up to for years in this space. I love her consultancy, Usable Learning. I love her book, Design for How People Learn. She has her new book now, Talk to the Elephant, which is about behavior change. And she came on to talk about that, as well as to show how some of those some of those concepts would apply to customer education.
Yeah.
And it got really substantial, again, for like someone who's not in our space, but is so familiar with the research behind learning and behavior change. And from an actionable perspective, she was able to apply those concepts in a really elegant way. So my heart was aflutter the entire time.
Yeah, it was really good. And it was that connect, I think, I needed to hear, and I think a lot of us needed to hear, with an author of one of the books that we always talk about. It's one of our, I mean, if you look at the C-Lab bookshelf, you know, that's squarely put in there.
Yeah. It's the first instructional design book that I recommend people read.
Yeah, and it was good to listen to her. I met up with her later too, because I like to do it when we're editing and putting things together, ask a follow-up questions, and it was really great to connect, because I've always felt like you have this thread of instructional design and how it changes a little bit with what we're doing. You know, you have your traditional, like, this is the way we do things, but that always has to adapt and we have to make those calls. And she was really, really, she's got really good stuff to say. So you should go back and listen to that one for sure, if you haven't already.
100%. And so, as we say, the data don't lie. It was, a very strong year for interview that I conducted for some reason, but it was very close. Dave, I'm poking
fun. Hey, I don't take it. The thing that they all line up is that
Dave was
really
just like passive aggressively
episodes.
Like drinking his drink while I was saying that.
You can't see it on the video.
But when you look at the numbers, it was actually pretty close and consistent outside of that top five. So really close to those same numbers we saw, I have a whole list here, Dave. Like, what were some of the other episodes that performed pretty close to our top five?
Let me go through that. The where's my list? Okay, here we go. Lila Meyer on return on investment, which that was a big one for me, because being able to talk with Lila, we worked together years ago. We continue to talk. And seeing that progression of ROI and the discussion of how customer education helps achieve it at Gainsight is pulling that thread. And it's a really good one for you to listen to. Next
you did
one.
A two-parter with Michelle Wiedemer, and I thought that was great. One of those episodes on learner-centered design also did really close to the top five. And I always love hearing Michelle's point of view on content strategy and content production. Again, she's a real one.
Yeah, and I would definitely go back, and that's a ChatGPT episode if I've ever heard one, as far as pulling out the meat and the really good bones of the discussion, right? All right, let's keep going. You could talk about Zoe and brand advocacy and product-led growth.
Yeah, Zoe from Notion. That was a fun one. Again, like someone who is in the weeds doing the work, but doing it at Notion, which is such a product-led company and so reliant on brand advocates who, you know, Notion has a bunch of end users who are out there who are advocating for Notion, who, you know, they aren't the executive sponsor of an enterprise account. They are people who are out there who are genuine fans of the brand. So how does customer education and community, for instance, work together to channel that advocacy? She shared a lot of great perspective on that. So I was super happy to have her on the show.
Yeah, that's and with a brand like Notion, where it's really evolving quickly, now it's kind of thinking like it seems like it's being subsumed by AI. But it was great. It's great to follow up and learn from her on that and how it's all pulling through. Emily Brogan, customer first thinking. Wow, jeez.
Thinking with Brogan.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Keeping the customer first in mind is, I mean, again, go listen to the episode, but if we don't do that, we tend not to sometimes. I know I've been really focused and heads down and like, I just got to get this thing out. And then you lose focus of what really matters.
100%. And earlier in the year, Sharon Castillo, again, someone who I am surprised we did not have on the show earlier. Maybe the stars just didn't align, but she talked to us about something that we don't often talk about in customer education, which is designing for accessibility. So I learned a lot in that episode, because that's actually not an area that I know very much about either. So
yeah, and I think that's super important too, Adam, because again, we tend in customer education when we start out to focus on speed, the need for speed, and that there's all these things that are important in aggregate that we should be aspiring to get to. And accessibility is one of those that we need to think about. And we can now more because the platforms and tooling we're using kind of has that built in some cases.
Yeah, for sure. Any others you'd highlight? Any personal favorite? Yeah, I know your personal favorite already, but.
Yeah.
Do you have any others you'd call out?
My favorite this year that I was so freaking thrilled to be able to have a discussion with was a discussion with Jeffrey Moore, Jeff Moore. The Crossing Chasm author. He's had a number of other books since then. So I'm not doing this career justice. But it was fun because we've talked about the Crossing the Chasm motif and how it impacts the work we do. And I think it's been, for me at least, it's been a focal point of that progression and being able to talk the language of business. And you say, well, you know, yes, education is like this, but we're right here right now, or we're right here right now, or we're dealing with this problem right now. And that I'd have to say was one of my all-time favorites, like the Nick Meta fanboy episode. How about you? What's your most favorite?
That we didn't already mention, I think I would call out one more fanboy moment, which is, you know, similar to Julie Dirksen, there were some folks where I just did not think that I could ask them to be on the show and they would just say yes. We had Mark Killens, who's the founder of HubSpot Academy, and he came on the show to talk us through the early days of building out HubSpot Academy and the evolution, but as well as what he's working on now with a people-first TTM approach, which I thought was super cool because it ties a lot of ways into like how we don't do customer education, community, digital CS, all of these things. We don't do them just to deliver content. We do them for people to get certain outcomes, but we do it through the power and personality of our own people as well, right? Like our employees at our companies, our subject matter experts, our community members, influencers who are aligned with our brand, you know, similar to this whole idea that Zoe was talking about in the Notion episode. So like, I really liked that he gave us a model and a framework for that, but also that he just, you know, took us into the fun early days of what is now an extremely iconic customer education program.
Yeah, it was really good to hear. And I always love hearing those. It's kind of, it's history, but it's not that long ago. You know, it's, what was it like when you were in the trench doing the thing? Oh, it was like this. It was really cool or really hard. And here's really what happened. And that's what I really appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I cannot remember things that happened 10 years ago at this point. So, you know, kudos to Mark for remembering it with as much depth and clarity as he has.
Yeah, the pace of change has been outrageous, to be sure. Which, hey, why don't we lead into our pace of change into... How did our predictions map and where are we going?
Mm-hmm. This is the last part of our ritual purging of the year 2024. Every year.
Get out of here.
We make predictions every year. And so we want to come back and revisit how we did on them. So let's go prediction by prediction. Dave, you want to start with the first one that we predicted for this year?
Yeah, I'll lead on with AI, of course. And we broke these down into segments. So the first one was AI shifting to prove value, right? It's not a fad. It's not a toy. It's not a gimmick. It's real. Cool. Okay. Is it? What happened? So, Adam, what did you think? I know what I think about AI this year, but let's take our first blush.
Yeah, I mean, I think like. Different places along the hype cycle, but definitely the narrative of AI this year to me had a lot to do with people still really, you know, betting on it. Obviously, I don't think AI is going anywhere, but being in a bit of that trough of disillusionment around the applications of it. And I mean, even in our world, we've seen a lot of people who have implemented AI first solutions to mixed results. Some people have really gotten good value with it for certain use cases. But they either try to expand it into different use cases where it doesn't perform, or, you know, in some cases, like not every vendor delivers on AI equally. So, you know, I think there has been a shift to like needing to justify the value of AI and not just slapping it onto everything or just, you know, without question buying any AI product. But I don't know. It's been a mixed bag of like, I think people still really, you know, trying as many AI solutions as possible to see which ones will prove that value while still, I think, like being in that trough of disillusionment. So,
yeah, I don't just a quick response to that. I don't know about you, Adam, but I have a ChatGPT account. I have Google, you know, Gemini 2.0. I've been using Claude. You know, there's all these different tools that mm-hmm. are they're very different in some ways and similar in others. But unless you're actually actively working on them, you've got to spend the time with the platforms.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we've been doing some stuff even with Notebook. I like Claude myself. I'm in ChatGPT as well. But like, there's a difference between that kind of like generalized conversational generative LLM.
Right.
I'm still thinking back to a couple of years ago where like we didn't even know what any of these terms meant. And that also shows you a little bit how like AI is really starting to work its way into our lives. And I think maybe more specifically, and this will kind of get us into our second prediction, is, not just the generalized ones, but in our space, there are a couple of things that we're seeing. We're seeing on one hand that there are a lot of existing legacy products that are having AI slapped onto them. Yeah, so some like kind of trivial surface level AI features. But we predicted that we would see in 2025 some startups being built from the ground using AI to solve customer education specific problems. And I think even last year, we'd seen some start to solve more generalized, say like customer success problems.
Right.
For instance, I think we talked last year about Barry, who is doing a conversational virtual CSM product. And that's, to support kind of digital CS programs. But I do think we're starting to see it in customer education as well. Dave, what have you seen in terms of startups actually, AI first startups in the customer education space?
I saw some breathtaking things start to really appear and resonate, right? Like I get the use cases now. And just to go back a little bit to your comment about slapping AI on anything, I've seen so much of that too, like you have, where it's like, oh, now our editor, whatever, it's just ChatGPT. Come on. A lot of the cases it's like that. But now moving forward, one thing I've seen, and again, if you're out there, Sana Labs, and listening, we want to talk to you actively, because an AI first LMS, that's intriguing. And when you get into, I've been investigating and doing some analysis, and investigating sounds terrible, doing some analysis and looking at the new platforms with people that I've worked with over this last year. And there's this one CEO even said, can't I get AI to do a lot of the work that we're seeing, a lot of the stuff I need to do? And I'm like, yes and no, right? Sana Labs might be the first one to look at. They're now internally facing, as much as I can tell, but I think with some external use cases.
And there are some people that are using them for customer education.
That's good to hear.
Maybe that can be... It could be a future episode. Maybe we could have like Mark from Spryker come and talk about what he's been doing.
Yeah, here's an invitation. If you're using Sana Labs and want to talk about it, that's great. Anything else on Sana before we go into the hot list that I have?
No, I mean, like we've seen a lot of other companies come from the ground up that are either solving customer education problems more specifically with AI to drive that, or companies that really are just like AI first. I mean, we talked about Cluso last episode. Cluso, one of our sponsors as well. Yeah. Right. Like making AI content generation, for walkthroughs, documentation and videos. So that's going to speed up a lot of people's processes and democratize like the steps that go between getting a solution that someone can walk through in a browser and like something documented about it.
To that point, I wanted to tap on that. We're going to be doing some more work with Cluso here real soon and show some short videos, and those will probably show up on LinkedIn Live so that you know it's not audio format. But the thing that I've been inside the like really learning about Cluso, and the thing that really it gets me excited is how quickly it is for anybody. Just double click on that word, anybody, to put together content. And I see this as being one of those platforms that allow us, like going back to that democratization word, that's really important. I was talking with people the other day, and they said, go back to that word democratization. What do you mean by that? And they go, this means that all of us that are working on this product, the subject matter experts and stuff, now I don't have this friction between us where it's going to take them a lot of time to get me something that I need. when I'm building content. It's like, oh, this is really easy. Click, 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 click. And then they get excited because you can add little embellishments and things like that, just like you would in TikTok or YouTube editor, and people know this stuff. And that's why those kinds of, like Kluso is one of those platforms I say, notwithstanding the fact they're a sponsor, I use it, right?
Yeah. I mean, we use them too. And in fact, like it's becoming a tool in our tool belt to say, okay, for instance, if we know that our support agents can walk through the solution, you know, to break fix a certain problem, but they're not skilled documenters, like it's easier now for us to be able to say, hey, why don't you come into Kluso, walk through the steps, and then we will take the other part of that, which is, you know, taking Kluso's initial output and then refining that into whatever we want to publish. So here again, it's like this is still human in the loop stuff, right? It's not automatically generating your documentation and video with no input whatsoever, right? Because I think some people think like, oh, I should just be able to say, hey, write me a piece of documentation about a feature that does this. And that's not how it happens, right? You still need human expertise. You still need human skill. You still need humans to edit or curate or all of that. But these tools are making it way easier to do the work in the middle. And I would say another one on the instructional design or e-learning side of this would be Parta. Mm-hmm. And Parta, I'm really impressed with the way that they have looked at a product like Articulate Rise and looked at how rapid e-learning development works and says, well, what if we could do that again with more input and participation directly from people around the business and make it easier for them to contribute directly to these drafts? What if we could make it collaborative? And most importantly, what if we could do it in the customer education space with features that are more designed for embedding into a customer LMS or being able to match your brand and your aesthetic or more easily do bulk uploads and localization and things like that. So these are things that you really need to be thinking about playing in the customer education space that I really appreciate that the team at Parta has been working on.
Yeah, you did a project with them, did you not?
Yeah, we're using them.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I've started to get involved with Parta too, and we're going to talk more with them this year and show what the art of the possible is.
Hey, listeners. Recently, I ordered some new equipment for the C-Lab podcast. When a couple of weeks had passed, I still didn't have it. I hopped online to check the tracking details. Yep, for sure, my order made it from overseas to the U.S. within only a few days, but then it got stuck in a postal warehouse nearby for almost a week. And then it hit me. It's the classic last mile problem. For product suppliers, the most expensive and complex part of getting a product delivered to your customer's doorstep isn't the hundreds of miles traveled at the beginning of its journey. It's that final mile. Sound familiar? That's because it's the same with customer education. We create expert learning content for customers and users, and then what? Just 5% or less of that is sometimes actually even viewed. Most everything we create is at the mercy of CSMs and our customer admins themselves. And if they don't proactively push this material along to our users, most of them aren't going to go looking for it on their own. So we're excited to share that Brainstorm is solving this last mile problem for customer education teams. Brainstorm enables you to empower your customers with turnkey end user training campaigns, including adaptive learning flows, events, emails, surveys, and more. Customers just have to hit go. Learn more and get a free 90-day trial today when you visit brainstorminc.com/CELab.
Let me add one more and then we'll move on. The other one that I wanted to add here is Synthesia.
Synthesia? I thought we said they were Synthesia.
Synthesia?
I don't know. Maybe I'm becoming European.
Oh, good for you.
I'm also going to start saying like Myro and Gyra, which all my German coworkers and Dutch coworkers say.
Fingernails on a blackboard here. Okay. But Synthesia is one of those sleeper. I mean, we all know the potential of it, but I have to say that I talked with Kevin Alster earlier in the year, maybe even last year. And Synthesia is like, oh, we could use this for customer education. We're exploring the use cases. And I saw some of them in action. Mm-hmm. So the diversity, having a platform like that, that can not just do audio, but it can also present video avatars, animated people that look like you, right? And me,
yep,
with our voice. you know, vis-a-vis things like 11 Labs and, you know, Well Said Labs. So now we're getting that non-uncanny valley video that accompanies the content that we're creating. Really works well in video.
Yeah, and appreciate that you called out like Well Said and 11 Labs for things like natural audio, localization, things like that. Again, like some of these tools are really speeding up the way that we work. I would say similar for something like HeyGen, right? On the video side, video avatar, but with a localization bent. You can put your own video into HeyGen and you could localize yourself and all of a sudden it will be you with your mouth movements, your voice, but you're speaking Turkish, which is cool.
Yeah, it was super cool.
Well, cool. So lots of, I mean, I think we were spot on to say that there would be some cool companies coming up to solve problems in the customer education space with AI. But, you know, in a way, like I while I'll give ourselves the check mark for that prediction, I think there was more activity than I even anticipated in 2025 in this space, which is showing again that there's a lot of opportunity in the space, that enough people are willing to bet their companies on it.
It's almost overwhelming to see the pace of change that is coming at us. And that's why it's like a hold on to your seat, get used to the terminology, do some research on AI, spend some time hands-on with it, and you'll start figuring out what everybody else is thinking. And but it's that, it seems like that golden age again where, wow, we've got this new thing, let's throw everything at it. What are we really doing? And I don't know. I think we had a couple other points in there. Did we want to go over before we get to our predictions for 2025?
Yeah, sure. So we said that there would be much more of a focus on efficiency, which I think was true. There already was. We're already starting to see a trend towards efficiency. Excuse me. Efficiency makes me sneeze, apparently. I think what we saw here was, you know, a trend, you know, even coming from the investor level around measuring ARR per FTE, right? The amount of revenue you have per employee. Using AI as a way to become more efficient over time, but also automation in the way that we deliver, right? If we can't hire as many CSMs or support agents as we could in the past, how do we use digital CS, digital CX, scaled CS, right? We talked about that earlier with the Dan Ennis episode. How do we use those as tools in our tool belt to become more efficient?
Yeah. All that in mind, and then rolling in AI with it, that now we're seeing processes, and I feel like customer education has found the thread into a much larger tapestry of activity.
Yeah. Yeah. And that actually, I think, ties to the last prediction that we talked about, which is that we said we would see more consolidation in customer education with community and ultimately digital customer success. And anecdotally, I have seen it happening quite a bit in org structure. I've seen more of these functions coming together, either to sit side by side within a customer success org under a scaled leader. We had a digital customer success book come out this year from Nick Mitta and Kelly Capote. And they talked about some of the different org structures. You could do federated, you could do centralized. But like, I am seeing this come together way more, usually under a team with a combined mandate to drive the digital programs. It might be called scaled CS, scaled CX, digital CX, digital CS. There are so many different permutations of this, but ultimately this is where it's headed, because you've got a lot of digital customer success teams who are coming from a customer success background. So they're basically saying, hey, how can I take these things that customer success managers do all day and automate them? But now we're starting to see these other practices flooding in from the world of customer education, documentation, community, like teams who already know how to scale and how to deliver a great experience at scale, coming into this world. And I'm going to give a shout out here to another podcast. I think I'm not supposed to do this because then people leave our podcast and listen to another one, but I don't care. I'm going to do it. I think you're better if you listen to more podcasts, right? I don't know why I'm saying this. I'm going to give a shout out to edit this out. I'm going to give a shout out to the Digital CX podcast hosted by Alex Turkovich. I appeared on it earlier this year. There we go. There's the tie. No, but like, honestly, whether you don't have to listen to my episode because I talk about a lot of the stuff that I talk about on here. Listen to the other episodes because they have a lot of fantastic digital CS and digital CX practitioners on there talking about how their organizations are set up. Yeah. What are the practices they're doing? What experiments are they running? What are they piloting? And that will help make it a lot more concrete how these different spaces are coming together. But equally, you'll notice there are a lot of familiar faces and voices there. There are a lot of people who are coming from the world of customer education and bringing their best practices into digital CS. So
it's awesome.
I love to see that trend.
That's awesome. Yeah, more of that. All right.
More of that.
Let's next get year. On to 2025.
And what's going on?
This is kind of like our bonus lightning round here. Can we make predictions? We can do this? We had to do this. This is a tradition.
We have to because we have to come back at the end of the year and say whether we did, whether we predicted or not.
All right, let's go. Let's give ourselves 5 minutes or so. Let's bang through it. We'll always go over that, but we're trying to do the time thing here.
Yeah,
so
no, let's do
it. Can we take the first one like through?
Yeah, we're going to do this in like 90. Okay, in 90 seconds. The first is I think we're going to see a continued evolution of the trend I just talked about. We're going to see digital customer experience or digital customer success roll up with customer ed and community. We're going to see more teams with a combined mandate, not just to be efficient themselves, but to scale other teams. Like they are going to be measured based on their ability to either drive activation, adoption, and retention at scale for customer segments that don't get human support.
Yep.
But they will also probably have mandates to drive efficiency in the way that teams with a human touch are efficient, right? So it should ultimately probably inflect on the size of a CSM portfolio, and it should inflect on things like contact rate or support ticket deflection, which keeps support teams lean.
Good stuff. We're going to go back and forth on what we got. Next one that we want to talk about is teams working and addressing non-revenue specific numbers. Like I think we talked contract rate. I wanted to mention, and they're one of our sponsors, and the term of EQL, the education qualified leads, metrics that are helping us think more broadly than just a number or how many trainings or whatever
it's,
like that.
It's possible. I mean, it is definitely possible that like EQLs that's education qualified leads, by the way, will become a thing. Like as we think about how these programs combined can ultimately source leads either for net new business or for upsell. So in that sense, we're thinking of ourselves as a bit of a marketing funnel. But what I mean by teams taking non-revenue numbers is, you know, traditionally, the only education teams who have like really had to like deeply sign up to take a number and commit to it were teams who were revenue generating education teams. So they had to run to bookings margin and revenue, right? So you took that revenue number. I think we are going to see increasingly customer education teams who raise their hand and sign up to take a different number in the business that ultimately shows their impact. So like I was talking about a moment ago.
Like NRR.
Could be, but I think more common will be something like contact rate, so like customer contact rate, support ticket deflection, time to value or activation, something that can be more directly influenced by a customer education team so that they can really take a confident stake in driving that number. And if you're doing that again, like at scale, and you need to be able to drive more customers to find value with fewer people to do it. And if you need to, and with fewer tickets coming in, right, so you have a healthier gross margin, well, that's something that a customer education team can actually capably raise their hand and say, hey, I can take a number here. And I think that's going to give customer education teams more credibility.
Yeah, and I've seen that too. I think there's more confidence because they go, I can measure this, so I'm going to take it. That's a good one.
And then, I'll finish mine and then we can go to yours, Dave. Like,
good.
I think we will see customer education teams not just challenged to scale what other teams do, but to use AI to scale themselves, right, to become more efficient. But I do not think the core act of content creation is going to be fundamentally disrupted. I think there are going to be tools that will allow us to do production of content more efficiently, like we talked about some of them a moment ago. But I think we'll see more cycles of programs who think that they can have content being created completely automated, top to tail. Hey, ChatGPT, write me an article about a product that does this. And they will pretty quickly realize they can't do that because it becomes a garbage in, garbage out problem. And furthermore, what they're going to realize is if they want that content served directly to the customer via AI, like through an AI chatbot, that the garbage in, garbage out problem becomes even worse. So I actually think the customer education teams will be tasked with creating more accurate and discoverable content that can be sourced through those surfaces versus being challenged to create all of their content completely with AI as more companies realize that they can't do that without having a garbage in, garbage out problem.
Yeah, I dig that. Okay. You hit on a lot of stuff in a short time period, but that's super cool. You know, we can't create garbage content. We've got to create something with intentional that maps to our value prop.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more next year. But Dave, you want to give a few of your predictions?
Yeah, I'll make it real quick. Some of the things that I'm thinking of is I think we're going to see a continued evolution of what we call customer education. We've talked all about this, you know, how we're working with community, we're working with scaled CX, scaled CS, all these functions. It's fluid, in my opinion. One thing I think you're really going to be watching a lot more of is you talked about content, but the act and motion of creating content workflows, right? How are we using these tools smarter, better, faster, such that we take the same skills we have, we're not at risk of losing our jobs. Now we can do a lot more and a lot better in the same amount of time, or, you know, make more interactive stuff. That to me, that's important. It's not just we're slapping AI on content creation. We're intentionally thinking about, oh, I'll use ChatGPT for this, and I'll use this as my source, and I'll have a methodology, mm-hmm. right? The other thing I'd say is that that going a little further, the purpose of customer ed should be refined a little further. You know, like something came out of AI directly for me. I was working with Notebook LM, and I got this thing out of it talking about, like, tell me more about what customer education is today to you, ChatGPT. And it's like, oh, well,
Notebook LM.
Let me tell you. Notebook LM is Google thing. So it's really kind of funny. But I get this thing out of, and I was actually working with Notebook LM. So that's Google Gemini. And the comment that came back, and I lost it. It disappeared. I screwed something up. It said, imagine a spectrum of business in SaaS where, you know, you usually have venture capital backed portfolio companies, and there's like a bridge, a spectrum. On one side, there's small organizations with limited resources that are hitting challenges with scale, all these different things. We talk about them. How do we get a community active? How do we get, you know, we're support tickets down, all this other stuff. And then the other, you're a more mature company that can think about separate teams and units to train, educate, build content, enable. And customer education is that space in between and beyond where you're still connecting with the customer first. It's like, wow, that came out of AI. Like, that was pretty cool to think about that. So it's a lot of interesting things that we can now make queries of. We can assemble models. We can think about it more like, I'm going back to my science roots now, dude, where I'm thinking, God, I can put all this stuff together. There's a risk to that, which you and I have talked about separately and through the flow of work, then things we've been doing together and building content. It's like, yeah, that looks really sterile. And it looks like a computer did that, Dave. And Adam, you know, whatever we do, that's important to watch as we go forward. We've got to make sure that we temper our hopes and dreams about AI with the reality of us and our craft.
100%. Any other predictions, Dave, before we wrap up?
I want to think about jobs a little bit more, but I'm feeling a lot more positive. The thing that I'm thinking right now is that from everybody I've talked to, all the people I've engaged with, all the companies I've seen, the new tools that are out there, I feel like my call to action as a professional is to stay working actively with these technologies to understand what they can do for myself. And I think we all should spend time on that.
I agree. I think we will see more jobs appear in 2025 in the customer education space. I think more of them will be aligned to digital CS, digital CX, and I think a lot of them will come with more of an expectation that you can take advantage of AI tools in your production process, especially if you're a leader coming in and building for the first time. You can't just run the pre-AI playbook without any of those tools in place. So I think we'll see AI coming in earlier into the way that these programs who are just starting up today, not just create content, but analyze the data that's coming in, make recommendations really cool. based on like what they're seeing in support tickets, et cetera. All those things that we used to do manually, you'll be able to do, I think, a lot more efficiently with AI tools. So I agree, like being able to to understand what types of tools can do what will really help drive that.
And the other thing that I didn't want, the nuance I didn't want to get lost here about that, yes, all that, and we really need to actively do our homework to be able to work with our leadership, particularly executive leadership, to make sure that we have a rationalization of the tools that are being presented to us. Meaning, hey, yeah, I've checked this out. I tried it. I've done the work. Here's the data. This is what this AI solution can do, rather than allow a runaway condition where, you know, now, and this is perfectly innocent, but we see a lot of products coming out there saying that you can save so much time and take what took months to weeks or days. And while that's true in some contexts, that really establishes kind of a scary precedent when you're talking about staffing and resources. We have could do so much more with less, but we still need to be human and active in the processes that we work on.
Yeah. Otherwise, you run into that garbage in, garbage out scenario that we talked about earlier. So, I mean, listen, in 2025, we will definitely come back to a lot of these topics. We'll talk more about digital CX, digital CS. We'll talk about AI and how that's being integrated into different different processes. And I would put the same question to our listeners. We should probably throw this up on our LinkedIn page as well. What do you want to hear us talk about? Who do you want us to talk to? Whose voices would you like highlighted on our fun little show next year?
Yeah.
Because we will do our darndest to track down the people who can give you the best insights into those things.
Amen to that.
That's what we do.
Amen to that. Okay. And on that note, if you, our friends, our audience, want to learn more, we have a podcast website at, that we just mentioned, customer.education. Easy. It's great. You can find all of our stuff there as we link it in. We try to put transcripts. We haven't done, I need to update that. But anyway, we also are part of a customer education community where you can connect with, learn from, and share your ideas with your peers. And they're the leaders who are making a difference. Exactly like you were talking about, Adam, that we, there's a lot of folks out there. We want to hear from you. If you want to talk, you've got a great subject, reach out.
Yep. We always say special thanks to Alan Coda for our theme music. And we ask you to, you know what? It's the holidays. Maybe you're like sitting around. Maybe you're not doing as much. Maybe you're at home with the family. Maybe you want to open up the podcast app. Leave us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That would be super cool if you're kind of like in your like calm state and want to take a moment to do that while I am like calmly wrapping up the show. Maybe you're feeling so inspired. We would be really grateful for that.
Amen. Amen. This has been a labor of love for years.
It has. And we want to keep doing it. And to our audience, thank you as always for joining us for another year of this fun little exploratory show. And we hope that you go out in 2025 to educate, experiment,
find your
people.
Cheers, everybody. Thanks for joining us.